got your early 90s. We got, oh, you pioneered a genre. You've had you've had crossover success. You've played big festivals. You've been in, you've had syncs in films and video games. And now you're just technically on your own, and et cetera. Oh, and Jordan retired in 2017. Can you carry on? And you have a newfound sense of freedom. See, we've done it. We're done now.
Yeah, look at that. You've done it. Yeah. Who needs that one sheet any longer?
Right, exactly. there's nothing left.
Let's see if I
what would one. You be pleased if no one ever asked you again?
With us, the band name question has been asked
12 billion times.
12 billion times. So where did the name come from? And you know, I remember when I was a kid, there were band names that were odd. Like Def Leppard is a kind of an odd.
Yeah.
But I never accepted it. Even when I was a fan of Bring On the Heartbreak and some of those early albums, and I was buying Circus and Kerrang and all the magazines.
Right.
It was never something that I felt that I needed to know, because it's the two words.
It works.
It flows together.
It works.
And so, again, going to our band name, the Crystal Method, it was really more about the way that the three words hung in the air after we first heard it said by a friend who was this rapper we were working with.
This latest recording is kind of interesting because it's sort of kind of a post-pandemic record. And yet, I'm not really sure that we are out of the pandemic yet. So it's like, but what I do think, just by sheer luck, and probably not sheer luck, happens to work, is that we're all looking for the trip out.
We are.
We certainly could not. You're picking three words for what we all want right now, more than world peace, which we also want the idiots to do, to stop. But for the purpose of being timeless, when don't we want a trip out?
Yeah. For the album, the first album I released post Ken Jordan back in 2018, I had gotten home from a trip. From a road trip, I was out on the road and I came home and I was kind of debriefing my wife on the weekend and I said something about, I mentioned I got on the plane and for my trip home, and I thought, oh, the trip home, I like the way that sounds. So I wrote that down, and then it went 2018, late 2018, the trip home was released, and then, a year plus later, everybody was made to make that trip home. So we all went home. We all were isolated and confined in our own spaces and told to stay. And then the trip home started to have a different meaning. And then it was like, now we need the trip out. I need to get out. So then I had already written the trip out down on a sheet, because when my friend Glenn from Future Funk Squad is a friend, Glenn Nichols, who's from the UK, and he and I co-produced the trip home with me. The trip home was meant to be like this sort of a cinematic score to a movie that as soon as you hear the score, you want to see the movie, that kind of vibe. So even though it wasn't a score, it was meant to be that vibe. So it was very cinematic. It had lots of lush moments. It wasn't, I went over to Sound City and ran the mix through not their previous board, but they went in, they replaced the Neve with something as close as to the original one that was in there.
Right.
And I always wanted to, I always wanted to hear the rough, tumble, edgy Crystal Method sound smoothed out and
through that warmed
up through the Neve console. So that was something that was a bucket list. So then as the album was developing, there seemed to be some songs that weren't fitting on the trip home. And then I did the whole, sheet of paper, line down the middle, the trip home on one side and the trip out on the other side and moved a couple of the songs that we were working on for the trip home over to the trip out. And then once we were all home, it was definitely
even more poignant.
More poignant, yes.
You pulled out some classic synths, and they're really cranky, aren't they?
Yes. I have a great synth collection, and they're all imperfect in their own way. They all take a moment to warm up, and when you do play them, knobs or pots are dusty, oscillators are drifting. There's something going on there that needs to be fine-tuned, needs to be tuned up, but I work with it. You know.
But I think that's part of the, you see, everybody, not everybody, but 72.6%, not an exact amount,
pretty close,
of electronic musicians, the first thing they try to do is, can we get that sound from Ola Moore? Can we get that Depeche sound from Just Can't Get? Can we get this? And then they try and they try and they try and they try, and they go, maybe I just better pull the karaoke.
Yeah, it's weird when you go in and I've heard some of those isolated parts from some of those tracks, like some early Depeche Mode and some things, and on their own they just sound kind of, fluffy and not really that interesting, but when you layer them all together and the way that they're played and the way that they're recorded, they come out sounding completely different.
So, what type of music do you play?
Yeah,
Full New Yorker just came out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But more importantly, why you get to be you and why you're not one of the 4,246 people at this very moment putting up something on SoundCloud that's kind of sort of like it, but ain't going to approach it.
Yeah, it's hard. Initially, when we released our first single back in 1994, I think the term was Big Beat, which was something that was coined in Brighton.
Right,
With the whole Fatboy Slim,
right.
Chemical Brothers, although they weren't from, they weren't from Brighton. But the Big Beat, was something that was easy when you went into the record store, when you went in to buy the vinyl, that was the slot there. And then as the scene started to develop, there was West Coast breaks, and of course we're West Coast, and breakbeat is part of the breakbeat, big beat genre. And then it was this sort of generic electronica, which was I kind of thought when the electronica part of it, I just thought of it was, I thought it was pretty benign. It was something that didn't really offend me in any way. It was sounded a little, flighty because it had that little ka at the end of it. But I thought, well, there's Metallica with electronica. That's fine.
It was a little more lightweight.
Yes, but there was also trip hop, which was a very very popular term, which some songs of ours
can get into that groove,
half tempo, slower,
right.
90 beats per minute. There's lots of that sort of Massive Attack and that sort of sound in there. But our first single, Now's the Time, was on one side it was a 126 breakbeat, kind of big beat, whatever how you want to call it, and on the other side was this track called Devilicious Groove, which was this much slower, trip hoppy sort of thing. So, and we, from the get, we were always into not sounding exactly the same if that was going to be our first and only album, then that we were going to get both of those two sounds on there, because that's what we were into. We were into both.
Right.
We loved bands like Left Field that did all that kind of dubby down tempo stuff. We loved, those two genres. So then again, we moved forward, electronica, that was fine. Then it was electronic. And then 10 years or so ago, the term EDM sort of came into play. And that one had a little bit of disdain for those that have been in it for a while, that was a new term. So when you were asking, what would you tell someone if they asked you? I've been on an airplane and I've been talking to someone who had no idea you know, what our music sounded like. And I had to tell them, and then I would say, I'd go through, well, it's kind of like electronica. And then they were, their eyes would like, you know, they wouldn't, you could tell they, and then I maybe go through, well, so like breakbeat, like, and then I finally, I just said, I guess you, more like EDM. Oh, that's like the, that's
yeah,
like the,
that, I know that's become the Kleenex.
Yes,
of,
exactly. Yeah. The Kleenex of, and I think it has to do with the fact that EDC, the big popular festival, electronic dance music, Electric Daisy Carnival. It's also very easy. It flows off, you know, it's EDM, EDC.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that are is out of our control. So, I've always preferred to just let someone else come up with you know, that particular description of our sound. We used to at one point we were like, we're just going to call it like, you know, we're going to go and look at a salsa ad and it's like
make up a name,
thick and chunky, yeah. You know, something that,
that works.
You know, extra spicy, thick and chunky.
Collaboration, bringing in a lot of other voices, a lot of other sounds. Chicken or egg? Where does it go? How do you decide?
Well, with the collaboration, you know, my first collaborator was, of course, Ken. And when we were in the studio, we were two different people. We thought a lot about, liked a lot of similar things, but there was always that moment when we were, you know, there was a, do you like this? I don't really like that much. Okay, well, let's try something different. Or I'd be playing something and he would, that's really good. Let's hammer that out for a little bit. Or you're always looking for inspiration or direction when you're working with someone. And so when the people that I had the great privilege to work with on this album are people, first of all, that I got along with personally. I had a chance to hang out with a few of them. You know, the first track on the album, Watch Me Now, which features Coda and Val, two artists and that I met through this writing camp or whatever. We went out to the Palm Springs and right before COVID and hung out by the pool and just made music for a couple days and so I got along with them really well. And so when we started to collaborate on this track, it was just, you know, it wasn't hard. It wasn't like it didn't take a lot of effort. It wasn't like, you know, pulling teeth like sometimes when you go in with someone that you don't really know that well or aren't vibing with. It was just so casual. And through that, you know, I pull out the Jupiter 6, I start playing this little riff on it. Coda picks up his bass, he starts playing something. Val goes over to the computer. He's like, oh, hey, yeah, this is the beat. And then let's throw some lyrics on it. What are we going to talk? You know, what are, we got, you know, the man on the top of the mountain that's just tired of being locked down. The person that's right. been had a boot on his throat for the last, you know, how many years, and he's finally, you know, pushing his way out through the muck. And so, and then by the end of that one session, there was the bones of this track. And for collaborators, you know, that's what I'm always looking for, that kindred spirit, if you will, but also someone that's gonna point out the things that are, you know, that, because sometimes when I'm working, or I'm noodling, or I'm playing around with an instrument, or I'm playing something, I'll just go through this whole, you know, freestyle, you know, not really paying attention to what I'm doing. It kind of reminds me of the first time we ever worked with Tom Morello. He came into our studio, and he was warming up, and he was just started to, you know, just getting the sound, making sure his amp was on, and he started to do this bump, 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 bump. And Ken and I looked at each other and like, what was that? He goes, what?
Right.
Could not remember. We asked him,
didn't
no, that
remember
thing that you
yeah.
just did, what was that? And he goes, I don't know. I was just warming up. So we went over and put a DAT in and started to record. And then lo and behold, a couple hours later or whatever it was, he did that riff again. And just by warming up, and he went off, came back in the next day, and we had this track fleshed out from this thing that he wouldn't have pointed out on his own. He wouldn't have said, hey, record this, because it just came naturally. It was just something that flowed out of him. So those moments that I may have, nothing that I, you know, I can't really tell at the moment that they're special. And that's
right.
Working with somebody, another collaborator, somebody you trust,
they can point it out.
They can say that's cool.
Yeah.
That like, let's, and that's one of the, also the amazing things that, you know, always work with our, with when Ken and I worked, because before, you know, before digital audio, before we could record, you know, hours and hours and hours of endless audio, yep. You had to, you know, what we used to do was we had a DAT machine. We put the beat on the left side and the whatever synth we were playing on the right side. And then it would be, I'd jam for like 20 minutes. And as I was doing that, he would have a little notepad and he would write down, he did something cool at this point. And then we went back and basically needle dropped those moments. Mm-hmm. and then found those little things and then went from there. So, as far as collaborators on this album, they're all of them that I was very fortunate to work with. They came in with ideas. They came in with enthusiasm. And it was a pleasure, an honor to work with all of them.
Where did the Iggy come from?
Well, my friend Hyper, his name is Guy Hatfield. We've been friends for a long time. He was coming to town. We've been wanting to do something together, and we started this track. And he lives in Seattle. He called me one night, and he's like, "Oh my God, I got this sample that I just was watching the Gimme Danger." A documentary by Jim Jarmusch about Iggy and the Stooges, and he said that there's a moment at the end of it where, you know, he goes, I gotta send it to you. So I went and I watched the doc, and I somehow slipped through the cracks. I hadn't seen it before, but I loved it, and I thought to myself, well, wow, let's see, this, you know, I've been in this for a little while, and I've done syncs and licenses and dealt with these sort of situations before. And I said to my manager, Richard, who's been my manager for 25 years. And I said,
can I,
what do you think? Do you think this is possible? And he goes, well, you know, he used to manage Henry Rollins, and Henry Rollins is friends with, Iggy. And,
yep, yep.
And so an email chain started, and then finally we got word that they were interested. We just had to figure out how to make it work. And thankfully with Jim's Jarmusch's blessing and Iggy's blessing and lots of contracts, we were able to work it out. And then we kept sending them updates on where the track was, and we kept getting this positive feedback from them. And then back in November, I happened to be in New York. The album was done. I just mastered it. I was in New York. I was doing a show at this club that was basically had a, it was Greenwich Village, and it was a club that had a double bill. So earlier in the night, there was like a rock band playing, and then I was going to come in and close the night out, clear all the people out. And so as they were sweeping and, doing the changeover, I look over and I see this guy, everybody's wearing masks, but I see this coiffed blonde hair and the striking features of a classic New York rocker. And I said, that's Jim Jarmusch. And I went over and I introduced myself, and he's like, oh man, I'm so glad I was able to, couldn't have been kinder. We sat there and talked for 15 minutes.
That's so cool.
And the way that all rounded out and came together, by the end of the album, you go through a bunch of different genres, although all steeped in electronic music and that sort of style. There are different elements and different things that and the Crystal Method has always had this, yes, we make music with electronic, with synthesizers and in.
But you're not making EDM music.
No, it's
you're making songs that just happen to have
a lot
of electronics in it.
Yeah. So it was a perfect way to close out the album.
I love it. I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Okay.
And what it is two of your songs on the outside,
mm-hmm.
and then in between, you get to play anything you want,